just skip it if we've already done it. You can just make it.
Yeah.
Beautiful day. Okay, I'll call the City of Lapine work session to order at 6:38 p.m. on June 28th, 2017. We have to reestablish quorum.
Karen Ward, present.
Stu Martinez, present.
Connie Freeze, present.
Don Greiner, present.
Dennis Scott, present. We did the pledge once. We don't need to do that again. We have, I want to add an added agenda item, and it's going to be Corey's wages, and we need approval to add that item. All in favor of adding it?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
There's a couple things I'd like to add.
Okay.
I'd like to add something about code enforcement, if that's possible, and also consider animal control, because we've had some complaints about that, those two things.
Can we cover that all under code enforcement?
Yeah, let's just that group it under one item. All in favor of adding this item?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, so two agenda items are added. Public comments?
Not yet.
Okay. At the end. Okay, let's move on for item number six, discussion on draft vehicle for hire ordinance.
We can want me to kick it off for you?
Yeah, sure.
So as you're all probably likely aware, several of the communities, cities around Central Oregon have been adopting these vehicle for hire ordinances, and it's largely driven by Ubers coming into them. I believe Ubers now had their first trips in both Bend and Redmond. So what you're looking at here tonight is a draft ordinance that would establish regulations for vehicles for hire. And vehicles for hire includes both taxi companies and these transportation network companies, which are the ride sharing companies like Uber and Lyft. So tonight I'll walk through a couple of the key provisions, and then we can answer any questions that you have, and I think Jeremy's got some comments as well that we'll jump in and tackle. But one of the main components in walking through the ordinance in section 4 is that it imposes a licensing obligation on the companies. So in this licensing obligation will apply to both the taxi companies and the TNCs, and it's an annual renewal license, and they pay a license fee to operate in the city. Another portion of that is that they're also going to be required to get a business license, and that's included there in section 4.1. So in addition to the licensing obligation, there's certain driver requirements. So you'll see in section 5, it outlines some of the main requirements that each driver for both taxi companies and the transportation network companies must comply with, and among other things, the drivers all have to be 21 years of age, and that seems to be the standard across the state for different companies, for different cities, is what the age they impose for drivers. Now, some of the companies have different ages. They might impose 23. I think Lyft requires all their drivers to be 23, but 21 is about the standard rather than 16 or 18. Another aspect is that the companies under the ordinance are required to perform background checks on each of their drivers. And one, in the application process, there's in section 4 as well, the companies are obligated to certify that they're in compliance with all the provisions of this ordinance, including among other things that they're performing these background checks. And you can see that the background checks go back 7 years, and they include local, state, and federal criminal investigations, and these are for their drivers.
So real quick, the background check, so you stated it, I'm going to restate it. So the application process, the licensing through the city, if they're licensed by us, they must be complying with the background check provision.
They'll have certified, so part of the component there is in section 4.2, that they're going to certify that they're in compliance with this, and they're and so that would include the 5.3 there that they've performed these
okay,
background
checks.
So
they're checks. Not going to show us the background checks. We're not going to conduct background checks.
They're doing it all on their own.
We're going to trust because correct. They're certifying that they've done
That's
it.
That's correct.
Okay.
And I should have stated this at the outset, but this particular ordinance is substantially similar to all the other ordinances in Central Oregon, and the reason for some of these provisions that you might not otherwise, we might not otherwise bring to you, is because they want a consistency among the communities. So if we had imposed perhaps an obligation that they provide us all these results and that we would run these background checks, we did get pushback from them that, you know, they weren't going to be able to do that, because this is how, essentially what Uber said in our conversations, this is how they operate, is they'll provide these things and they'll certify, and they do it annually, but they have a system that they do it statewide annually, and therefore that's what we've come up with in section 5.3.
And furthermore, the reality is, if we don't accept essentially what they've communicated to us, is if we don't accept their ordinance, they will not provide the service down here. And so it more or less take it or leave it. Now, I want to be clear that there are some problematic provisions in this ordinance. The insurance minimums, for example, are certainly not ideal. And we attempted to make modifications to provisions like that. And the response was, well, fine, you can make the changes. We just won't accept it, and we won't provide you the service. And to some extent, I understand and can appreciate where they're coming from, because they must have consistency throughout the various jurisdictions that they operate. They don't want to run into a situation where in Sisters they have to have $4 million worth of coverage, in Bend $2 million, in Lapine $1 million. It doesn't make sense, particularly for a national organization. And we're, quite frankly, small. We're not really even on their radar. However, you know, again, it's not ideal. But if you want the service, you're going to have to roll with the ordinance.
As we segue into the insurance provisions, so in Section 6, you'll see the first section, 6.1, applies to both the taxi companies and the TNCs, and it imposes the obligation for the commercial general liability insurance. Where there's divergence is for the auto insurance, the commercial auto insurance. In 6.3, if you look at that, there's the $1 million limit for the taxi companies. 6.4 has the vehicle, the TNC insurance, and it breaks it out in three stages. And it's how they do it is, if you're a driver and you're driving around and you're not working for, at the time, if you're not driving for Uber, you have to have your own personal insurance, but you're not covered under their insurance. What they broke it out is as soon as you start, as soon as you log onto the app and you're available to pick someone up, there's a certain requirement that you have, a certain limit of insurance, and that's in section, or that's 6.4A. Once you've accepted a ride and you're going to pick someone up, it kicks it up and it bumps it into that next level of insurance. Why this wasn't ideal is because this is different than what we're imposing on the taxi companies. I will say that in, at least in Sisters, when they adopted it, I didn't hear anything from the taxi companies, and I believe that was the same in Bend. I know it was an issue in other places, in other cities that were going through this, but this is the standard breakdown for how the vehicle for hire, or pardon me, how the transportation network companies break up their insurance, and I think they've lobbied the insurance companies to get it so it's standardized in this way. But at the outset, we didn't have this. We wanted the uniform insurance for the companies, and that was one of the points that they said it has to be this way for us to operate. Section 7 goes through some of the operation requirements. They have to keep certain records. They have to have vehicle identification like a taxi company would. There's passenger restrictions. They must have and implement, maintain, and enforce a zero tolerance for use of drugs and alcohol. The audit section in 8 grants the city the ability to audit the company no more than 3 times a year, and it's to audit for compliance with this ordinance. And moving on to section 9, 9, 10, the rest of it will involve, that gives us the license denial, revocation, suspension, penalties, and it imposes a penalty for a violation of the ordinance, and it also, if they're violating the ordinance, it grants the city the right to suspend, revoke, or deny the initial application. I know that was a lot and that was a breeze through, but does anyone have any questions about the ordinance or the companies or anything else related to this?
No, I'll start with you.
I have one question. 7.3 says the passenger restrictions that the drivers cannot accept a street hail. If you're a regular taxi company, is there any reason why they can't do that?
Go ahead. So that's no TNC, so that's no transportation network, so that would be Uber. I think the impetus there was that the taxi companies didn't want those transportation network companies taking the street.
Okay,
hails.
So this only applies to
TNC.
To Uber, yeah.
Well, and those companies want them only to accept people through their apps.
That's correct. Yeah, it's a win-win. Yeah.
It's both sides protecting their interests.
Well, another thing I was going to ask, too, does this cover driverless cars? Or is that a whole new...
The legal landscape hasn't even been charted.
Yeah, we'll cross that bridge when they happen here in a couple of years, maybe. So the short
That's
answer...
That's all I have.
No, yeah. Short answer is no, Don.
I guess on the licensing and the permit to operate within the city, how is that going to be enforced? I mean, how would you even really know?
Yeah, it's a very good question. And the response to that question is it's going to be honor code, because there's no way to really track their operations in here but for the fact that they're going to reach out, submit an application, you know, get a license. The related issue is we have no idea how many drivers may actually be going in and out of Lapine. I don't know how any city can track that. So I don't have a good answer for you.
Because, I mean, there's obviously taxi companies that come here now.
Yeah.
You know, how are you, notifying them that we're changing our ordinance, other than obviously if we change it, it'd be in a public notice, right?
Yeah, we could, if we have specific knowledge of a taxi cab company that is operational in here, then obviously notifying them via letter or email would be prudent. Presumably, these taxi cab companies are getting business licenses from us as well. They should, if they're operating inside the city limits. But my understanding is we don't really know, correct, Corey, whether or not there is taxi cab companies operating down here.
I would assume at times, potentially. I feel like I've seen a couple.
Not necessarily in the city limits, but in the greater LaPlante area, I've seen a few.
Yeah.
In this ordinance, that section 4.1 on the application, or section 4 on the licenses, that requires the company to get a license, and they're responsible for doing all the checks on, so each individual driver does not do anything with the city.
Yeah, it's really interesting. That's a good point in the topic of discussion. It is only Uber or the TNC that gets the license.
Okay.
And so what's interesting here is our business license requires that each individual independent contractor, each like a taxi cabs. Oftentimes you have the hub, the taxi cab company, but each driver is an independent contractor. And technically each independent contractor would be required to get a business license. Uber has set this up in such a way where it's just Uber gets the license, the individual drivers do not. But then the related issue is, well, what do we do about our business licensing? Because our business licensing would say that if you're an independent contractor operating an independent business, which an Uber driver theoretically is, right? They should be licensed. It's a mess.
Well, and Uber doesn't treat them as employees either.
No, that's
so
what I'm saying.
Total limbo.
That's what I'm saying. So they're theoretically supposed to be independent contractors.
They're nothing.
We all know that they're really not. But what do you do? If you want to take the resources and the time to track each and every driver down, you could. But do we really want to?
What other cities have adopted this ordinance?
In Central Oregon? Sisters has adopted it. Bend has adopted it. Redmond, have they adopted it? Yeah. Redmond adopted it. Madras will be adopting here shortly. I guess it's just you guys.
Don't know if Prineville's done anything. Yeah.
Madras will. Or I think, did
they adopt it at the last?
That's right, they did. So Madras has already adopted it. Prineville, I haven't heard.
Not sure. I don't know.
Yeah.
And the whole thing is just for Uber, basically.
It's really driven by Uber. Mm-hmm. This ordinance is Uber's ordinance.
Yeah. If so if you're up in Bend and you have a license and you just happen at one time to drive to Lapine to take somebody, you have to have a license in Lapine too.
Technically you should, yeah.
No matter where you go, you have to have a license.
If we adopt this ordinance.
Right.
If we don't have this ordinance, then they just operate They just operate.
And we have no control whatsoever. At least this way, we have some record and some type of connection.
In case something happens.
That's right.
Well, in other words, then, if we adopt this ordinance, we should notify Uber that if they want to drop off or pick up in Lapine, they need to get a business license.
This is what this would
be. But it would be one business license, not one for every driver, if I'm understanding what we're talking
under
about.
Under this ordinance, yes.
And does it cover chauffeur vehicles like
limos and stuff?
And stuff like that?
Does that fall under the taxi category?
I don't know. Yeah, I think it does. Let me view the vehicle. For hire means any vehicle used for ground transportation of passengers for compensation within city. And then if you look, I'm looking at the definitions on page 3, vehicle for hire.
Right.
There are the ones that are exempted there, school bus, emergency vehicles. So the chauffeur would fall, animal-drawn vehicles and pedicabs as well.
Yeah. So basically, by adopting this, we're protecting ourselves in case something happens, don't we?
Some manners, yes.
But there's no way we're going to keep track of anybody. Unless they get in an accident or something happens. Or
well, we're putting the burden on the company to monitor their drivers.
Right.
So theoretically right now, although it's probably all in Uber's fault anyways, there could be a driver who just works in South County, maybe just inside the city of Lapine, doesn't go to Bend or Redmond, and right now there's no obligation from the city for the company to provide background checks and make sure that they're carrying certain insurance limits, et cetera.
Correct. Yeah. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Uber has an internal policy, though, that they won't service areas that have not adopted this structure, correct? They're not going to reach out and allow their drivers to service areas, municipalities, if you will, that have not adopted the ordinance.
I think so. That sounds right. I know when a few other cities previously adopted something different that imposed a different burden, they wouldn't service those cities.
Stu, you're quiet over there. Any thoughts?
No. Who'd have ever thought? But this in no way guarantees. I'm not an Uber person. I don't even know it. Is that an acronym or what?
It's like Google, right? You know, they just came up with it one day in their creative work environments.
Okay, but they are a registered company.
Yeah.
Oh, big time.
In the state of Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to have a state of Oregon, you have to be registered with the Secretary of State.
They're a foreign business corporation.
Okay. So by us signing this, the city is not, are there any other companies other than Uber?
There's Lyft.
One other real competitor is Lyft.
Lyft.
Yeah.
Okay, so then by signing this agreement with Uber, we're not blocking out the other one?
Oh, no. This isn't even an agreement with Uber per se. This is just an ordinance. So okay. No, we are not.
Yeah. No. They would be, Lyft would count as that TNC.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
They would fall underneath this ordinance too, wouldn't they? Mm-hmm. This isn't specifically for Uber, although Uber built it. But
in fact, if Uber was smart, they would have been working in coordination with Lyft, so that there's symmetry. But
okay, Karen, I don't want you to be cut out here.
I was just sitting here thinking about the elderly people that go on to the bus at the senior center, and if they came to the front desk and they asked me whether I recommend that cab company, how am I going to know that that would be okay?
Well, you could certainly make your own personal recommendation. But what do you mean? How would you know if that would be okay?
Well, you know, what is it? Central.
CYC.
Yeah,
I can
verify that those drivers are driving those buses drive pretty safely.
Right.
And I can trust them with my seniors.
Sure.
What I'm saying is that if I don't know that cab company from nowhere,
right,
I'm not going to be able to recommend that.
Maybe not.
So if it is an Uber driver and we have this ordinance on the books, then we're trusting that they've conducted the background checks and that they've, you know, verified that their driver has certain insurance requirements. And then you have to get one of, to use one of these services, you have to use the app. To get that service.
They just kind of show up.
And inside the app, there's reviews. So each driver had, there's a review of both. There's a review of the passenger and the driver, if I understand correctly, how to use the app.
She's so, talking about old people that don't have apps.
Then they probably won't use the service.
Uber, yeah.
For lack of a better way to put it.
But Uber's not going to just show up for the reason.
No. And you can't hail them.
That's so right. They're not going to park outside the senior center and try to pick up a ride.
And I might go now. Just
for for your own safety, I would recommend.
I was in Portland.
Any
of
them. I would recommend
a few months ago.
Right.
And I took rides in cabs in Portland. And I said to myself, why did I get in this man's cab? So, you know, some of it can be very scary.
I've done the same with taxi cabs and Uber. You just never know.
Yeah. But Uber is a respected company.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, the other parts of the country, it's
very popular.
I mean, it's very popular.
Absolutely.
I mean, they check on their drivers. They just don't let anybody drive.
Well, people like it because they can have a driver there within 5 minutes, depending on your geography.
That's right.
Yeah. So she brought up an interesting question, though. So it affects COIC buses?
No.
Well, I mean, is by way of competition?
No, as far as licensing.
In terms of a vehicle for hire?
You pay a fee to get on the tour of the bus.
If you pay
to
use public transportation, I don't know.
It doesn't say exempt public transportation.
That's a really good question. We will look.
The city of Bend would have to deal with
use my non-profit transportation providers only for.
And this is basically a copy of what everybody else is doing.
Correct.
Correct.
And I guess the short answer to that, if it does, we can't do a whole lot with it. If it does affect them, does impose the licensing requirements on them. I don't see a specific exemption. And that is, we can't do a whole lot if you don't want to adopt it. Does that make sense? Because Uber's not going to allow us to modify the definition of vehicle for hire. But I don't think COIC...
How would that even affect them, though? The
public COIC?
Transportation?
I mean, it would. Worst case scenario, COIC has to get a license. That shouldn't be a problem. But vehicle, subsection B under vehicle for hire identifies vehicles used by nonprofit transportation providers. But then the caveat there is it says solely for elderly or handicapped persons. Yes.
They probably don't. Yeah,
I don't
they
think
don't discriminate against the riders. I can ride COIC buses.
Correct. And so I guess what I'm saying is they're not exempted from this ordinance necessarily.
Interesting.
Two vehicles used to provide courtesy transportation at no charge to and from parking lots, hotels, rental offices, retirement homes, and the like are omitted.
So that would be like people that...
Shovels.
Yeah.
Prairie house shovels.
Mm-hmm. Right. They're subject to it.
Yeah. But that's not COIC.
Either
they're not courtesy.
COIC is basically a shovel.
They charge for their ride.
But they do charge.
They do charge.
Are they a nonprofit?
Yes, but not. But they don't solely for elderly. It's always a fine print. That's an interesting one.
I wonder
if the city of Bend is making CYC get a license to subscribe to this ordinance.
Or maybe they've more or less just turned a blind eye.
Yeah, I agree. I'm sure they have. I would be surprised if they do.
Okay, moving along, we have to decide if we're going to put this on the next agenda.
Yeah.
For vote.
Yeah, the next meeting.
Okay, so we'll come up with any more questions, we can
answer. Sounds good.
At that point, yeah.
No tweaks necessary. Okay.
Okay, so July 12th, we'll vote on it one way or the other. Okay, Edward Jones, please.
Sure. So we are in a situation or at that point in time where we need to consider an extension of the existing lease agreement with Edward Jones. And quite frankly, the way in which the underlying lease is written, it's self-operative. And so this is more or less for informational purposes to let you know that we have received word that Edward Jones is interested in extending their lease for another year. The current lease agreement provides for 5 one-year extension terms, 5 consecutive one-year extension terms. And so what I've advised Corey to do is simply send a letter to Edward Jones confirming the extension. Under the terms of the lease, their rent increases by 3%. It's an annual 3% escalator, which is very standard in commercial leases. And so unless we hear any pushback or objection from you all tonight, Corey and I will move forward with memorializing the extension.
And then it would be, you may have said it when I stepped out, it's the way this original agreement was written, there's the option for, if both parties agree, for 5 one-year renewals at the 3%.
So yeah, it's actually self-operative. It just happens unless
parties opt out.
Unless the tenant opts out.
Oh, so we've already agreed.
It's self-operative.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay, so we don't even have the choice.
Correct.
Oh.
As long as they've extended it.
I'm glad they're good tenants.
I was going to say.
Well, then if they're not good tenants, they're in default.
There's other, victim, yeah. Other options.
You push them out.
Okay.
Yeah.
This doesn't really have to have a council vote on it.
No, it's more informational purposes. As long as they're not in default and as long as they're otherwise performing, they've got this annual extension. And again, it is the standard to have an extension drafted that way, particularly with a tenant like Edward Jones. They want consistency. They want assurances that they're going to have space. Now, there is language in this lease that provides, and it's section 5.2 of the First Amendment, that provides if the landlord reasonably determines that the premises are needed for expansion or other landlord purposes. Don, you might have been on the council when we did the extension.
I wanted to know that still stays in here.
Then we have the ability to reject or not extend. And Corey, maybe that's what you're talking about.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's in section 5.2. And we would do that or initiate that by providing 30 days prior notice. But we would need to do that 30 days prior to the upcoming extension. Everyone follow me?
So we have an annual opportunity.
There you go. Yeah.
So every July.
And we would know that far ahead if we planned extension of office space and heat or anything like that. So we know more than a year in advance.
Oh, totally.
Technically, how it's supposed to work is they're supposed to give us 90 days advance written notice of their intent to extend. We have 30 days from receipt of that notice to tell them yay or nay.
To evaluate.
And if we don't need it, if the criteria is not met, i.e. if we do not need it for expansion or other city-specific purposes, the extension is self-operative.
Sounds good.
Any council have any comments? Look good.
So you'll get send a letter.
I'll draft the letter and I'll have it to you next week.
Okay.
Okay. Let's move on to the discussion of the draft noise ordinance.
So this is an ordinance that is very similar to your neighbor to the north. The city of Madras. Basically, this is an ordinance that's attempting to control noises, control to the extent that they are disruptive to the public, general welfare, safety, so on and so forth. Have you all had a chance to review the ordinance in advance of the meeting? So you get the essence of what the intent here, the objective here. It's not to stymie or otherwise control would otherwise be protected, freedom of speech rights and things of that nature. But again, it's to control, I hate using that word control, is to try to prevent unnecessary disruptions and noises that interfere with people's public enjoyment of property and so on. And I can go through the ordinance section by section if you'd like, but I thought it was relatively straightforward.
Yeah.
The one item that I didn't see, that actually I've heard a complaint on recently, especially on Finley Butte Road, I could possibly see it on, say, Reed or William Foss as well, the roads that are heading towards the industrial park where semis are driving, is J-brakes.
Yeah.
Whatever, is that what those are?
That's a state law.
J-brakes.
Yeah.
So
normally what happens there is that you work with ODOT.
Okay.
And ODOT will put signs on the north and south ends. Stu, you probably know about this as well. And they'll identify that they have been prohibited. But you do have to adopt an ordinance, if my recollection is correct. ODOT will not put those signs up unless you've adopted an ordinance that prohibits the J-brakes.
And the county put signs recently on Finley Butte. But in terms of having the sheriff's department enforce, we should have
any in the ordinance. So do you want me to look into that?
Yeah, I think we should insert that.
Do you have that issue? It's a relatively flat thoroughfare, so you...
I've heard complaints. We got a phone call a week ago, 2 weeks ago.
Really?
So it's coming down to the Butte off. They come down the Butte and they'll use their J-brakes.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right. It is fairly flat. I haven't personally heard of it. I've just heard a couple complaints.
Okay.
in my mind, it's low-hanging fruit if we can insert it in
might
here
as well.
While we're talking about
so, what I could do or what we could do is contact ODOT, confirm that that's the process.
Okay.
And then if that is, we'll include the prohibition in the ordinance.
Okay. Under unreasonable noises or
yeah.
something. Okay.
Yeah, because talking to Lieutenant DeLuca, some of his deputies don't want to enforce anything in the city because we don't have an ordinance. So that's
correct.
One reason this is coming to light.
And they won't unless we have that ordinance.
Right. You know, and probably the same thing goes with the brakes. If we don't have an ordinance for it, then they aren't going to enforce motor vehicle and traffic laws.
Yeah.
Have you routed this through the county for their input?
No.
Are you okay if we route it through the county?
Sure. Yeah.
That they're going to enforce it. It's
through the sheriff's department.
Yeah.
Basically.
Sure. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Because they were actually requesting that we have one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
The noise ordinance overall.
Right.
Yeah. Not necessarily related to the brakes.
No.
No.
The whole ordinance.
Be like more ordinances on code enforcement.
Absolutely.
Most every other city has them.
Yeah.
You know, so it's about time that we step up to the plate, Stu.
Well, I want us to address the truck route. If you're talking about noise issues on Finley View, you said you've received some complaints. Get the freaking trucks off of Finley View. Get them out in the industrial park, down the Reed Road to the traffic light. You got semis that are over the speed limit, going right by a ballpark, residential area, put them out in the industrial park.
Yeah, I can talk with Tammy about how to go about that. On the TSP, Finley View is designated as an industrial collector, but I can
change it.
I'll talk with her about how we can look into doing
that's,
that.
That's a different story.
Yeah, but that's
well,
a fair point.
Then I'd like to put that on the next agenda for the work session because that's been addressed and it's been put off since the city's been incorporated.
Is
it's like a flagpole.
It's been talked about before about
yes.
trying to keep, and I mean that's the purpose for the signal too, obviously, and Reed Road is
exactly.
Does not
that's why the damn thing was put in.
Okay, put that
I've up. Been putting it off for 8 years, too, so I'm going to get on it.
Does anybody have any comments on this?
I just had a question about, I noticed under 6.10, that under construction and repair buildings, that it talks about 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. on weekdays, so it doesn't address any weekend construction. And does that mean they would have to get a special permit to work construction on weekends, and is that normal?
6:10?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have people in our area, in Crescent Creek, that are working on Saturdays with construction projects.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's a common occurrence. Even Habitat works on the weekends.
Well, and the other ones address weekdays and weekends,
yeah,
but the construction one doesn't.
Okay. Would you like that changed?
I think so. I mean, you can operate a blower, but you can't use a hammer, you know?
Yeah, no, I hear you.
I mean, because the blower one said 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., and it doesn't specify days.
No, that's a very, very good comment.
What's everybody else think on that one?
Who's going to enforce it?
We're going to talk about that later.
well, basically, you're saying to make this to open it up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
I mean, that would the way it's worded, it would require them to get a permit
on Saturday or something.
And every time they were going to work weekends, they would have to get a permit.
Would you say the same hours on the weekends, 7 to 7?
Most of the time, it's usually a little later on the weekends. But and you have it up there.
I think the other ones say 10.
Loudspeakers say 10
to
10.
Right.
So
but,
10.
But this is protecting the neighbor so that they can have a quiet weekend also, not just, you know, so that the contractor can work.
And that's why I said 10.
That's why it's that way.
Yeah. Yeah. So instead of 7 a.m. on Saturday or Sunday, make it 10 a.m. to 7?
I would say since you have it 7 for the ending time, although you know they're working later in the summer.
Yeah.
But
let's just keep it at 7. Any other comments on that, Stu? I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No, I'm fine. No, so, really, I am.
Okay.
So I'm sorry, on the weekend, 7 to 10?
No, 10 to 7.
10 to 7, okay. I'm sorry, it wasn't clear what I heard, so.
Yeah.
What do you think, Don?
We hear the school and they're having their outdoor sports events and their PA system's pretty loud. I don't think we ought to do anything about it. Just a comment.
Mm-hmm. Karen, what do you think?
And that would be exempted, Don, under...
I noticed that. That's why I said that.
Okay.
I read it.
Good, Don.
Honestly.
and this is really, being an ex-police officer and dealing with this, it's the discretion of whoever...
And I should have said that. It's very subjective.
Yeah.
We can draft whatever we want, but ultimately, the officers, whether or not they do or they don't enforce it, it's all case by case.
Right. Yeah.
So, under Section 8 penalties, any violation of this ordinance is punishable by a fine not to exceed $500. So that's the Sheriff's Department.
They're, when they issue the citation.
So no more code enforcement for... I don't have to enforce
it. Hey, you shouldn't have.
Just not on the table.
You just want that clear.
For the record.
Okay, so we're gonna vote on this also next session. So if there's any other questions,
we'll make some tweaks.
Yeah, we'll work through it and then we'll talk with the county. If the county hasn't provided input by that date, I'd suggest you wait.
Yeah.
They're the ones enforcing it, so.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
But, you know, but they also want it.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's an issue there, but yeah.
We'll communicate with you, Corey, and then if it's ready to go, we'll have it ready for you all.
Yeah.
Okay. Was it drafted like in accordance to what theirs is at all? Or?
No, I believe Garrett, one of our associates, actually drafted it. And I believe he tried to piggyback on the city of Madras ordinance.
That's correct. That's what you told me.
Okay.
So that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. The city of Madras is a totally different county and a totally different enforcement.
It is. I think he just wanted to start from some framework or structure, an accepted noise ordinance.
Yeah.
And then again, that's why I'm encouraging the city to go to the county now to get their buy-in.
Yeah.
You have to start somewhere.
I basically told Garrett, he could have spent 20 hours building one from scratch or 1 hour amending an existing draft, and then go and make some tweaks from there. So that was my instruction.
Like Don says, Lapine is not
Madras
or Fenn, but most cities don't let you work construction on weekends. You know, that's why he's
miserable.
Yeah, I mean, most cities don't even allow that. I mean, usually it's eight to five or 8 to 6 or something like that. But we're Lapine. And we could always change it somewhere down the road. Okay, so.
Great.
We're done with this one?
Yes.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you all.
I'll talk to
appreciate
you.
Appreciate it.
Have a good holiday weekend, guys.
Likewise.
Yeah,
happy 4th.
Nice seeing you,
Will.
Have a good rafting trip.
Rafting? Who's going rafting? You are?
No, Al will be able to shoot.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Y'all have a good one.
Take care. See y'all. Bye-bye.
Talk to you soon.
Take care of you, Jared.
Okay, this is Corey's number 9 discussion on Artsville's community grant opportunity.
So this, I included in your packets a description of the Artsville community's grant guidelines. The only thing that needed some changing was the due dates. I don't know why they hadn't updated that, but this is the current guidelines for the grant. This is a little, going back, rewinding a year, this is the grant that the city was awarded that the city decided to contribute funds towards with Arts Central. It was supposed to be the mural project. Obviously that didn't occur. Fortunately, we were able to get our funds back. I had talked with the state, with the coordinator, Brian Wagner, who runs this program, about trying to keep those funds that were set aside for the city of Lapine, to keep them in Lapine. And he said, well, we can't really do that, mostly because we don't even think that we're gonna get the funds back. So I don't know if the state got their $7,500 back. Anyways, I'm bringing this to all of you because I'm asking if this is something that you want staff time spent in the next, I'd say, few months on preparing an application for. The deadline for the grant application is October 2nd, 2017. Ideally, if we're going to apply, we'd find another partner organization in Central Oregon that is focused on arts to kind of lead the project. We would have to contribute some funds, but the state obviously would give a grant as well if we were awarded. We'd have to, you know, find what the project was going to be, and there would take some time in preparing the grant. But if we wanted to get a public art project going, I think this is probably the best opportunity to get some funds to make something happen. So I'm sharing it because I haven't spent any time preparing the grant. I'm just thinking about that if we are going to, with July around the corner, July and August and September would need some time spent on it if we were going to submit.
Carol? Good comments or anything
about it?
Well, I think that down the road we will need to look at art, but I think we got to pull everything that's out there, like urban renewal and everybody that's working on beautifying it or making art exhibits or whatever. I think we have a little work to do before we get to the point where we actually go into this. I mean, I'm not against it. I mean, I think that some of the things that I've seen in some of the cities are very, very nice. Some of the cities have art exhibits on every corner that you really can't tell why they're there. I would like to see us not be in that, but to see something that everybody else would like to see, the animals, the that kind of thing, and to keep our concept of being a little city, not a great big huge city. With there's an art exhibit in Bend, and I'm not real sure what street it's on, but it looks like something that might have come out of 18th century, but I'm not real sure what it is. I know what the rooster is on Newport Avenue, but I don't know what that art exhibit is. I just think that we have to be a little bit more cautious with what we do, and we all pull together so that everybody's going in the same direction, if that's possible.
Okay. So, give your comments.
Well, in a way, I kind of agree with Karen. We do need it at some point. Whether that's now, I don't think is the right time. You've got everyone, staff has enough going on right now. I don't think, you know, the short deadline, you know, to get everything put together. We've got quite a bit of beautification going on right now with the streetscapes and everything going right through the middle of town. I think we do need to bring all the groups in together. Urban renewal, you've got the Park and Rec District doing the park down here with their dedication coming up over the holiday. There's a lot of stuff going on. I think we need to just throw the brake out a little bit until we get our damn flagpoles out. I mean, so we just need to slow down a little bit.
I was curious if staff had any ideas on what they were thinking as far as the art project.
I would think something similar, that's a great question. I would think something similar to what was proposed with the last go-around, which would be like a mural project, so taking a side of a building. Honestly, one thought that I'd had, because I see it almost every day, is there's some slats on the south end of this building. But other than that, there's a large area right in the middle that could be your mural. It's just a thought. Could be the same building that was proposed originally, right off of Huntington there. It's behind the town pump. When I was driving in from the north end of town, the north side of Wikia Station Pub is a big wall that's just blank right now. So I would try to work with some community members and try to come up with some ideas like that, and then kick them around council and see what you guys thought was the best choice. I think a mural is pretty low cost. Ideally, too, I'd want it to, that the original project was that they were going to work with the middle school to come up with some ideas for what the mural would look like, and then there'd be a, I'm not going to use the right term, kind of a curator type person who then helped take their ideas and turn it into a very nice mural. So it wasn't, you know,
I love kids' brushes. They're going to teach us and everything, yeah, I remember.
Exactly. Yeah. So it had that component as well. I would try to mirror it as much on the previous grant application to recycle as much of that material as possible. And I think that Brian Wagner would help. So I can't say for certain how much staff time it would take to line it up, but I'm thinking it wouldn't be as much as if we were just creating an application from scratch.
The other thing is, I wondered is if it could be incorporated into an existing project, like in some art in with the flagpole or something like that that we're already working on, versus coming up with something new. That way it wasn't sticking something out there in public that maybe the town, along with Karen's ideas, that maybe we're not ready to go that direction yet, if we couldn't do something like that.
That's a good question. I mean, I would have to check with Brian and find it, because this is, so the grant deadline's October. It's for projects occurring between January 1, 2018 and December 2018. So a year and a half from now, kind of a thing, is when the project could end. So there may be, maybe there's something in here where we say, you know, we're doing a transit center / city center. We want a piece of public art on there. We don't know where it's going to fit or what it's going to look like, but we want some grant dollars to help put it there once we figure that out through a public process. I think that could be an option. That's a good point. You know, or on a sidewalk or an intersection where, you're right, we are building more sidewalks, we're creating that beautification. Does it make sense to try to put a public art feature on one?
What about a monument sign?
Well, I think that is, I would say that's a separate project that we're probably going to, we've got that covered. I would look somewhere else to do
something. Don, let's have your comments. How much time do you have every day that you have free to do nothing?
It changes every single day.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a lot.
This is one more thing on a stack of whole lots of things that you have for responsibilities. I mean, it's just there. In my opinion, I don't think we ought to start on it until we decide what we want. Once we decide what we want and we have some sort of an idea of what we're going to do, then let's get the money. But to get the money ahead of time and just say, here, we got the money, now we got to find something to do, I don't go for that. I don't think it's, in my opinion, I don't think that should be high on our priority list.
Okay, good. And my comments go along with more like Corey's, like we got the transit center coming up, but we don't know what we want on there yet. I mean, these grants are going to be there again.
They're annual
grants, so we don't have to jump on this for the sake of jumping on it. And we're going to have public input on the transit center. At the same time, we could have public input on some of the art that goes on it.
Yeah.
You know, one step at a time here. Get the public involved, not just the council deciding on something.
Yeah.
So I think we should just put it on hold, and next year we can readdress it, because it's going to come up every year.
That makes sense. If we're going to have a new transit center and we've got our public out and the public says we'd like to have this as art on that piece of property, then we can go after the money.
Right.
Okay, we need some sort of direction for Corey to take.
I got four weights on there.
Okay, good. And end of that one. Let's go on to the next thing. We got a 10, I think this is yours, Jake. Update on proposed cost of living adjustments?
This is mine. This is just essentially a heads up that, you know, July 1 is on Saturday. My math right, I think, Saturday. And so start of the new fiscal year. That's the start of the new budget that we adopted. And back in those budget worksheets was a 2.5, I had budgeted in a 2.5% cost of living adjustment. I'm going to verify with it's the Western Region's essentially cost of living index, and it gives you a breakdown both monthly and then year over year on what that number should be. And if it's 2.2%, I'm going to do 2.2%. 2.5%, I'm going to do 2.5%. But my intent is to make that effective July 1. And this applies to payroll for cost of living. So just wanted to throw that out there. It's not a surprise. We've talked about it. I'm going to use a reputable national index to put that number in place.
You're basically asking just for our approval.
It's an update.
I'm sort of doing a courtesy, just a courtesy update.
Well, I'd say give us two.
We already gave approval by in the budget.
Right.
So
it's all budgeted.
Yeah. Okay. It's in there. It's going to take effect on Saturday. And then one, I forgot to, I could have added a little and after that. There also were raises, employee raises, not for myself, but for all the other employees, slated in the budget. And so I'm doing reviews next week. And based on those, I'm going to also move forward with changing some of those pay rates on July 1. You're going to ask about the salaries.
I am.
I can read mine sometimes. We have not gotten that back yet. The guy, Rob Van Cleve, who's the director of LPGI, who we contracted with, emailed me yesterday and said, hey, we had the draft ready for you. We then got last-minute results from one of the cities that said they weren't going to participate. We'll have a draft report for you next week. So I'm going to look at that, but ultimately I really see that salary schedule as something that ultimately council's going to adopt it, and it's a tool for beyond from now, both in hiring new employees and then also looking at, okay, someone's been here for this many years, they've, you know, gotten this many good reviews, based on the step schedule, whether it's just annual or whether it's based also on performance, I think there should be kind of two metrics in there. We're not gonna have that in time to talk about it, digest it, change it, tweak it, and then have council adopt it. So I would like to move forward with, I would essentially call the July 1 raises the last set of raises that will occur without the city having a salary schedule. And none of them are drastic. They all were on the worksheet that you guys received, and they were budgeted in all the personnel sections in every single fund. So it's not anything different than what we talked about at the beginning of May and then council adopted earlier this month. So, but salary schedule, yes. I've been waiting on that.
I didn't say a word.
No. I'm sorry. I was pointing like, thank you.
Any comments?
I have a comment. Okay. I'll save it until we see this report.
Okay. That's fair.
Sue?
Nope.
Karen? No? Okay, great. Moving on.
What's budgeted is budgeted.
So next time we use the budget, you know, staff will be using, ideally,
salary schedule.
I would be using the salary schedule right to put that together.
Well, I'm curious to see where they line up with what we're currently paying.
I'm curious.
If it is approved.
That's true. Yeah, if it's not adopted.
Well, we're going to adopt something, I'm sure.
Right now, Don, I have the sole discretion to essentially... Oh. No, I'm not, I don't mean it like that. I just mean I have no schedule based on what other cities do to even use as an index. It's sort of a, well, you've been here a while, you're doing good work, you were making that. It's been a year. Should you get some kind of an increase? That's essentially the rationale I'm using right now. So it's good. Yeah, good point.
We can move ahead, but you can't always go backwards. So
That's true.
So be a little careful.
That's true.
That's all. Okay, that's done. Discussion on public works on-call policy proposal and other employee handbook updates.
So do you want to say a little bit on this one?
Sure, I'll give a little brief overview. So currently, public works staff is on an on-call basis, emergencies, call-outs, whatever you want to call it. We do Thursday to Thursday. It's a rotation. I'm on it with the crew. Currently, it's two of us, so it's every other week.
So 24/7, 365, someone has the on-call phone for the city of Lubbock.
And it rotates Thursday to Thursday. Our current program is you get $100 for being on call, and you get a two-hour minimum for call-outs. I did some research on other on-call processes in other cities. I've been a part of other ones, and we're definitely on the low end for being on call, especially for being water, sewer, streets, what have you, you get called out for. So I looked at some data. I know the city of Bend pretty well because I work there. You get 2 hours of overtime a day for carrying a phone on call, so that would equate to 14 hours of overtime based on just carrying the phone for your week of on call in Bend. They went Wednesday to Wednesday, similar to us. And then it was whatever call out time you got was an hour and a half or time and a half rate. So based on, I did some math, based on an $18 an hour, which is kind of an average for our utility workers, someone who carried the phone in City of Bend based on just carrying the phone would be $378 to be on call.
For a week?
For a week. That's not any call out time.
Plus your salary.
Plus your salary. I looked at City of Sisters, which is kind of a confusing platform they use. They pay you for the hours you're on call. Not that, you know, so after hours, which is, how many hours did I figure? 125.5 hours are in a week that you don't work, they pay you for at 10% of your wage, which is would be $1.8 an hour, which I figured was 225.9 for being just on call, for just carrying the phone. And they're at a 2 hour minimum for a call out. Time and a half. So
Bend was at what minimum? I'm sorry. Were they 2 hours also?
2 hour minimum.
Bend was two.
No, just based on what you got called out for.
Oh, right.
So if you get called out for a half hour, you charge a half hour.
Right, but Bend, you said Sisters and us were currently on 2 hours minimum, but is Bend also?
No.
No.
Just what your time is.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Oregon Water Wonderland, which is a close district or sewer district, they are 175 per week. With a 2 hour minimum, time and a half per call out. Previously, while applying water and sewer districts, when I first started working here, $200 a week for carrying the phone, and you got Friday off paid after you came off call. So you went Thursday, and then you took Friday off paid. They gave you a break after you were on call. Currently, I said we're 100. I'm proposing that we do 200. And you only record what hours you get called out for. There's no 2 hour minimum. So if you get called out for an hour, you charge an hour of your time. Yep. And I think 200 is a lot more reasonable for being on call, especially now that the city is starting to really grow and I'm starting to see that on call get busier. And I think it holds our employees a little bit more accountable, more responsibility. There's more incentive to want to pack that phone. Because, I mean, you can get called out at midnight, or like I got called out on the Heath List station and I was there 6 hours that weekend. So I think we should definitely look at some options on this, I feel.
So this is outlined in our employee handbook, and there's a couple other changes that I'll get to in a little bit that I'd like to recommend that we change in the employee handbook. And then ultimately, we would have, council would have to readopt the changes to the employee handbook.
Let's get some comments on this one first.
Do you have any record of how many actual call-outs that you've had while they've been on call?
Yeah, we could get that for you.
Oh, you don't? I just thought you might have them.
I don't. Yet. I don't have them.
Roughly?
You're going to get a couple, maybe, on call for a week? One or two?
You at least get something.
Usually you get something, yep. Well, you might even get an emergency locate at night, and somebody's doing some power pole got hit, and you got to go out and locate water and sewer around for Mid-State. So you might have to go do that, you know, Thursday night at 11, you might get a call out for that. Or usually it's a sewer call out, it seems like nowadays. In winter times it's water, usually because water's freezing.
Jake forgot a pretty important point too, though, that part of the, when someone has the phone, first off, right now we've only got two guys, we're going to have a third. So that means everyone's on a
third week.
Every third week they're on call.
And I'd like to stay on call with my staff. I think it's fair, I'm part of the team.
Two is would be a tough bargain to drive.
I've been in that
where every other week before. You're on call. Because what Jake forgot to say is that when someone's on call, they have to stay within a 30-minute response time radius. And then they also, they, you know, can't be drinking heavy, they can't be doing anything like that, because if they get on call, they need to go respond to work. So I mean that's a responsibility 24/7. So
Sue, say something.
Well, I think what Jake said, on-call stuff, it's a dedicated person that takes a job that has an on-call status. Granted, they know what they're getting into, but, you know, it is quite a responsibility. They're aware of it when they take the job on, but then they need to be compensated for it. And it does interrupt your family time. It does interrupt, you know, vacations. It interrupts birthdays, everything. And I think 200 is more than, I think pretty cheap. So I have no problem.
Karen? No problem with it? I think 200 is good, but you aren't doing a 2-hour minimum also. I mean, most calls, I'm sure.
I think the call out should reflect your actual time spent doing right. something. When I look back and see, I want to see call outs for last year were on WikiUp Lift Station. How many times do guys get called up WikiUp Lift Station after hours? And every time it's going to show 2 hours each time, which really didn't reflect how much time they're actually there for.
So you want to know as a manager, did they spend 45 minutes on site work tinkering right. with it, or what was it?
Right. Did they spend, exactly.
5 minutes resetting something.
Right.
But being on call, like Stu says, that cuts into a lot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, you can't go to parties, you can't, really.
Wouldn't work for you.
No, wouldn't work for you. Not at all. Couldn't do that.
Cuts into your family time, too.
Yeah. And I'm going to start instituting, probably coming up on the weekends, they're going to do some checks on the weekend, too. And they're going to get paid for just actual time. They're doing some checks on some of our assets. Because, as we start getting bigger, there's some things I think we should be looking at, not just weekdays, but on the weekend as well. Just I wanted to throw that out there, too.
And what would that time be?
Maybe an hour on a Saturday, they go do some rounds and check on a few things. That time and a half. Not, they don't get 2-hour minimum for doing it. It's just, we're going to have a set time. This is what it takes to do these rounds. You shouldn't write 4 hours you did rounds because it only takes an hour to do rounds. But whatever we decide it is.
Oh, and that's good for the community to see them out there on a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we used to do that, and it meant a lot to the people. So, I think that's great.
I think bumping up their carry time, which I call it carry time, you're covered more for carry time, they're going to be more on board for wanting to do some of those weekend rounds, too.
Okay, so we don't need a vote on this or anything, but everybody's in sort of agreement that go ahead.
Something I haven't looked at for a while now, been busy and have kept putting it to the back burner. And
I'll throw out there that there's a little bit of a miscommunication between Jake and I, but Jake's been doing the right thing and taking the phone for a whole week. And, and then spending more time out in the field too, potentially on the Heath one. It's not fair for him or for the other guys too. So we need to help it up. But everyone who takes it now will have the same policy.
Because there's been two different policies right now. Mine's different than theirs, and this would make it just straight across the board for everybody.
In Jake's employment letter, when we hired him, it said that he would get some PTO instead of being paid overtime wages. But what we're going to do is it's going to be the same flat 200 a week plus overtime based on his wage instead of someone else's wage when he's carrying. And this, how council will actually approve this is you guys will see this in a formal update to amendment to the employee handbook.
And I like the flat rate. You make a certain amount, everybody makes the same. And Ben, they made it to where it was based on what you made an hour. So I'm on the same on-call rotation with Jack over here, but Jack gets paid more because his hourly rate's more.
Yeah.
But I do the same thing, I do the same checks. I think it's fair when you keep it a certain rate for everybody. That's why I put that in there.
Good. Go for it. You got something else?
Yeah, a few other things real quick. One is paid management leave. That's not discussed in the employee handbook at all?
No.
Okay. So what? When did that first come up as a topic?
When we hired you as a city manager.
As assistant city manager?
City manager.
Okay, so Rick gave me that privilege.
Rick gave me the PML.
Rick gave me that privilege, just for the record. So PML. So I'm a salaried employee. I never make overtime, you know, and Jake is a salaried employee. He never makes overtime. In lieu of overtime, and in certain cases working overtime, or working longer work weeks, we get, right now, we get 40 hours of paid management leave each year. So January 1 to December 31st, we have 40 hours of paid management leave to use. It does not, right now we have a setup where it does not roll over.
It won't roll over.
You have to use it or
your
lose it.
Your employment letters say.
Our employment letters say, yeah, we do. It's
we have a policy in their letters.
Not in the employee handbook. So I think what the policy would be is that essentially salaried employees
get these 40 hours of paid management.
Would get 40 hours of paid management. So that's just so that it's kind of memorialized and actually written in the employee handbook. But it's in our employment letters right now.
So it's good. Nothing changes except you're putting it in the handbook.
Correct. Just adding it to the employee handbook. That's all. The fixing the floating holidays, do you want to give the quickest kind of overview on that?
Sure.
Because I don't want to talk about
sure.
it.
So,
sorry.
We have, I think it's seven distinguished
six or seven.
Holidays. And that includes Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day.
4th of July is not one. That's automatic. It's not. You're talking about selectable.
No, I'm talking about defined.
Oh, defined.
Okay, and then there's four selectable holidays that you get three out of four. And those are Martin Luther King Day, President's Day, and Veterans Day. And then there's one day in December you can take any day of the month.
Floater.
So what we're proposing is that we eliminate that floating holiday because we got three out of the four selectables anyways, and just take Martin Luther King Day, President's Day, and Veterans Day off.
So
instead of trying to figure out who is taking their three by the end of the year, when Christmas time comes and we're almost at the end of the calendar, and trying to track them. We're not gaining anything by doing this, we're not losing anything, by doing this. We're just making it concrete.
So I didn't hear you say anything about Thanksgiving or Christmas.
Those are all defined. Everyone gets those already.
So I'll read you what we get defined.
Well, that's fine.
If you'd like. It's New Year's Day, Memorial Day, Independence Day, Labor Day, Thanksgiving, the day after Thanksgiving, and Christmas Day. And then the other three out of the four, we would just eliminate the fourth one.
It's mostly a tracking issue. And
not everybody would pick the same days, three out of those four.
It's a minor thing, but as Ashley said, we're not gaining anything or losing anything. I think it's just cleaning up a kind of an odd system.
And it is
system.
A really not a very fun process to track.
So that's one of them. That's another one that you'll see as a proposed amendment to the employee handbook. And then the final one is actually adding an employee complaint procedure form.
Correct.
And you've got a template. We'll put together a template for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the complaint procedure is maybe there is a complaint procedure
lined out. There's just no form for if an employee had a complaint to submit it to the city manager officially.
Perfect.
So we're just going to build the form that can be submitted to the city manager so he can use the process that's outlined in the handbook.
Do we have a lot of that, so we need a form?
Can I use one next week?
We don't, but it's there. It references it.
Yeah.
What about the procedure to go around the city manager?
That's outlined in there.
Okay. And you go to the mayor with the same claim form.
Okay.
There you go. Perfect.
I believe you go to the mayor.
I'm pretty confident.
I'm pretty sure it is.
We're just cleaning up stuff.
Yeah, we just went through
it. When are you planning on having this handbook updated?
Ideally, I'd say July 12th. If we can get all everything turned around in the next week, we can have to include the packets to make it. I'd like to make the on-call policy effective July 1, let's put it that way. So I would say that if we can adopt the handbook on July 12th, it'd be effective July 1,
okay.
Essentially. That'd be our goal.
That's operational. Don't you have the power to do that?
Because it's in the employee handbook, I don't...
It's a policy.
I think I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. All right. Any other comments on this? Let's move on. Other matters. You want to go first, Don? Or you want me to?
First of all, animal control, I remember back when I was on the council, we passed a whole lot of rules and regulations of what they could and could not have on the property and within the city limits, and I'm not sure if that cover most animal control problems or not, so it might be well to get that out and read it to make sure. The other thing is code enforcement. I'm disappointed. We talk code enforcement every single meeting that we have. And I think it's time to stop. I think it's time for us to tell the city manager that we want something done on code enforcement. And if that includes hiring another person or a part-time person to do it, I think we need to do it. It's time that we started telling people that we've asked you to do this long enough, now do it or we're going to do something about it. So that's my personal opinion.
I've heard some comments on this one.
Go for it.
I think Corey's doing a fine job. I don't have a problem with the way he's handling it. I don't think that, I think that I trust him to make the decision when to hire somebody, and I think he kind of has a plan in place, and I'm okay with this. So I don't see it as an issue. I think we live in a small town, and being too aggressive on code enforcement is not going to be beneficial to us as a city.
Okay. I think there's a time and a place for everything, and I think the city manager, the public works, the office staff, everybody is a little overloaded right now, and you take them as you get them. And I think we just went through the city manager's review, and points were made. Some, you know, things were brought to his attention. I think we need to let him work on those and move forward. And when the time comes to hire someone, we better hire someone. I don't know if this is the right time right now or not, but I think, yeah, I'm trusting his judgment right now, so I'm fine.
Karen?
Well, I think that people that are handling code enforcement now know whether or not they need help with that. So do you guys have money for another person to be hired for code enforcement?
So in next year's budget, we did not specifically set aside any funds for hiring a code enforcement officer, be it for 5 hours a week or for 40 hours a week. What we did budget for is hiring a community development director, a full-time person to take Tammy's position. Tammy right now works probably, on average, I'd say her invoices are 20 hours a week-ish. I'm kind of looking at you. I'm pretty confident in that.
Yeah, we'll cut it short, and she's very generous with her time.
Well, yeah, she's great. I mean, that's off the table in terms of discussion, but about 20 hours a week. And you know, if you do the math with what we're paying her, we could hire a full-time person. So that 20 hours a week goes to 40 hours a week. Depending on how many planning applications we get, there will be slack time in there. And my plan with putting together the job description for that position is to say 5% of their time, or if council, I mean, give me direction when that time comes, 10% of their time is spent a week on code enforcement. Now, the next piece too, if hiring a part-time code enforcement officer makes sense, my understanding is I would like to have a community development director in place who, when we hire a part-time code enforcement officer, they're the ones that train and manage and supervise the code enforcement officer, so that I'm not the one training and managing and supervising the code enforcement officer. That frees me up to spend more time communicating with council, making policy recommendations, asking council on strategic planning, other big high-level stuff that I should be spending my time on. So my plan right now is get a community development director on board over the winter. Next spring, when we're doing the budget process, let's budget in the ability to hire a code enforcement officer next summer, and if we have a good community development director on board, they can manage, supervise, and direct the code enforcement officer. That's my plan for the next year. Right now, we have an agreement with Deschutes County. They have code enforcement officers. I just talked with Chris Tiboni on one that's been dragging on for a long time on railroad, but I talked with him. He gave me an update, and he said he's got a list of 140 open cases, but at the same time, he said, send them my way. So it's a combination of us doing some code enforcement, but also passing it on to him to a degree. Now, I don't know how good he's going to be able to get results, but I think in the short term, that's an asset that we can use. Instead of hiring someone, we can sort of shift it to them and say, hey, we've got an agreement already in place where you provide these services. Let's see where that gets us in the short term. So that's kind of my thought process for how I've rationalized it. I can't ignore it. I mean, I live here, I drive through the city, and I see code enforcement issues, you know, not all over the place, but there are code enforcement issues. Some go away on their own, some come back, some are reoccurring. We've had that conversation, but it is something that I'm
okay, aware of. I think it, by the sounds, it's not time to do it yet.
I understand.
Hope.
And
the reason why I asked that question is because we keep getting more and more ordinances or codes or whatever you want to call them. So eventually down the road, I'm not saying today or tomorrow, eventually down the road we're going to have to put some money in that fund so that you can hire somebody. Yeah, or you're going to be out there regulating noise. That's just an example.
Well, that was wrote so that you didn't have to, so that the county does it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you put those rules in place, you have to be willing to.
But the way that the noise one was written was that the county will be enforcing it.
So part of it is
the sheriff's department.
How often do you see a policeman come for noise?
Oh, they don't come because there's no ordinance.
They didn't come because there wasn't an ordinance. So now we'll put an ordinance so they will come and enforce it. We didn't have anything for them to enforce.
Anyways, okay. Getting back to this,
okay, I'll trust
we aren't going to get anybody now, but, you know, I think, you know, you've told us you're going to spend so many hours a week and stuff like that. Just try to, and the budget is almost over with, just try to pick up the slack a little bit, I guess. I guess that's...
Oh, yeah, it's, you know, I mean, do you think it's worse than it was 6 months ago?
Well,
I don't think it's better or worse. I think it's kind of status quo.
It hasn't improved, I think.
Well, okay, that's right. Fair. And some of them are little ones, too. The improvement that hopefully we accomplish is you don't even know it's there because we get it within a couple weeks or a month.
Well, I was impressed with some of the things that were handled during cleanup week and the way that Jake went out and talked to some people and offered them the services that were available during that week, and they did it.
And I think that did help a little bit.
Yeah.
Having that cleanup time.
The dump over there by Crescent Creek, have you heard anything about that yet?
I've got a voicemail from Allison Green that I need to respond to. I want to talk to her about...
That's fine. It's being followed up on. That's all I have.
Correct.
Okay. So just try to be a little bit more aggressive, that's all. Until we hire somebody.
Yeah, and we'll plan on giving you updates too. I mean, we'll plan to do a monthly update on code.
I did sneak it in the job description on this utility worker. I'm just straight out of code. We'll assist in code enforcement.
Nice. It's on there. Good job.
Good. He's got his camera ready to go.
And we did offer a position to somebody, so we'll see how it shakes out.
Okay, let's move on to my agenda item, and that's Corey's cell. Back last year when we did the budget, we had, you know, he just came on. We put him down as $67,000. That's because Rick was still on board, and we're paying Rick over
$32,000. Oh, I guess they won.
$65,000, okay. And, you know, I think Rick was up to $3,200 a month, I think it was. You know, anyways, the point of the thing is, after Rick was going to get done, we were going to readjust Corey's salary. You know,
I'm sorry, I missed the numbers. We're busy.
You're busy?
Passing papers.
This was an amendment to my contract.
Right, I understood that part. It was the numbers.
So he's making $65,000 now. We're paying Rick $3,200 a month. And, you know, that was until Corey got to be full-time, which he's been that way for 6 months. We haven't heard from Rick in a long time. So now he's got all the responsibility. And at that point in time, we said we would have readjusted his salary when it came to that. You can check with other cities, but we aren't sisters. We aren't Ben. This makes 150. I mean, so I was thinking upping it to like between 80 or 85. And I need the council's input on that. I mean, and that's still saving the city money from last year, if you add up Rick's and Corey's both. We got to have some comments. You don't want to? What do you think, Don?
I think $85,000 is fair for right now.
he is doing a lot. And
he is doing a lot, and I think that he is doing an exceptionally good job on almost everything he
except
attempts to
accomplish.
I didn't want to say that.
I said it for you.
I just been shot down. Why would I want it?
Okay, Stu, we need a copy.
I think that's great.
You think that's fair?
Yes, I think it's more than fair. It's just like with Jake taking the phone and, you know, $200 for carrying the phone. You know, he's got more responsibility than Jake does. So I
and,
think...
And all, you know, all this salaries come right now because it's fiscal year, so
yes.
We don't address this all the time. We won't address it till next year. But and what do you think, Karen? You think 85 is a happy, happy number? Are you happy with 85?
Yes.
Okay.
So this will be on the...
That's twice tonight. You totally skipped over me. You're afraid I'm just going to speak when I want to?
Oh, I skipped over you? Oh,
okay.
I'm sorry.
I'm
go
okay
ahead.
So you guys still have to approve this contract on July 12th.
July 12th.
But it'll be likely in the consent agenda.
And it'll be retroactive July 1st.
Connie wants to say something.
No, I said
no,
it.
No, she just said she wasn't going to.
That's right.
I lost track over there.
Hey, by the way, you have a flagpole right there.
Okay, so Corey,
that's adjustments. That's what will be on the agenda for you guys to approve.
Another thing for July 12th.
Okay. And how much does he get for carrying the phone?
Call my cell phone anytime, free of charge.
Except
for my salary.
Yeah. Okay, we're down to public comments, staff comments, public comments. Let's go public. Gary.
All right. Thanks for being patient.
Well, so you were being patient.
Oh, I'm supposed to. Oh, okay. Well, okay. But I did want to tell you that this afternoon the parking board met and we passed our $540,000 budget. It's lean and mean. I want to invite everybody to our July 4th noon dedication of the Veterans Flagpole at Heritage Park. It's also, when I say veterans, it's all the services. And also on November the 11th, which would be Veterans Day, okay, there'll be dedication of the memorial plaques. That'll be just on the north side of those flagpoles. And so you'll be hearing more about that. And this, I think it's only like $20 to have a brick, so it's all going to be very nice. The Findlay Butte Community Building, there's no money for the paint. We just don't have it. To just give you an idea, we have right now we have a carryover of $50,000 from effective July 1st. That's got to run us all the way to November 1st. We have several fundraising events we believe will be within 2 weeks of making it with all the fundraising and so forth. We just don't have the money for that. We're trying to find out how much it's really going to cost in terms of the paint. Okay, the building desperately needs it because now it's beautiful on the inside, needs to be beautiful on the outside. So once we have that established, we're going to try to find out if there may be some grants or something available. So. We're open to any ideas that the council has brought, in its usual brilliant way, of any ideas like that. And the final thing I have a question about, as you know, we've been working hard and diligently on our comprehensive plan update. the state goal has certain goals in terms of planning, and they're mandated. And I'm just going to read this one. Goal one calls for the opportunity for citizens to be involved in all phases of the planning process. It requires each city and county to have a citizen involvement program containing six components specified in the goal. It also requires local governments to have a committee for citizen involvement to monitor and encourage public participation in planning. So the question is the city going to have such a creature?
That's a requirement for the for your district comp plan?
It's for all local governments. It's a statewide goal.
I would assume that'd be our planning commission, but I could be wrong.
Well, that would be the question, whether or not the planning commission, because it's a committee for citizen involvement to monitor and encourage public participation. So it's different than passing on the rules, I would think.
If you could forward me that language, I've never heard of that
before. You have it. I gave it to you in the in your copy.
It's in your comp plan.
Yeah, it's on page 12.
Okay.
Just it was is an inquiry.
Okay.
Sometimes these grandiose goals get overlooked. And if it's mandated, it's mandated. If it doesn't exist, then yeah, we all have to do something about it.
So
I would say that even the park district would have to do that.
Is your interpretation that that's a standing committee, 24/7, 365? I mean, because comp plans are only updated.
No, this is actually, yeah, this is a statewide planning that has to be done all the time kind of deal, but it's in terms of, it sounds like it's an ongoing committee, and I'm just asking about it.
I'll look into it.
Okay.
I'll look into it. I haven't heard of such a thing. We don't have a
citizen. Unless the planning.
Unless the planning commission is de facto.
I know no other city has it either. I mean, there's no.
Not that I know of.
No. I mean, okay. We discussed that once at a couple meetings.
I didn't want to make waves, but I did like the clarification.
So it's a good question.
Ask. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Are you guys doing an audit at some point?
If we spend $500,000 in our next fiscal year, then we have to go with an audit.
Okay.
We did not spend $500,000 this year.
Okay.
So we just have to do the financial reporting. However, that's always handled by a CPA.
Right.
We've also hired the CPA to do our budget stuff and also conform our software with the new QuickBooks that were tailored for our type of operation. And we're making sure that the input categories now are in conformity with the categories for the budget. Okay, so we've had good help on that. So we're going to get a lot more meaningful reports. There's going to be a lot more transparent and easy to understand.
That was a good plan.
Something that we want because, you know, people often believe because we're a special district, we've got endless funds. And when things don't get open or taken care of, we don't have always the answer they want to believe. So this is real important for us to keep do that. So we've been very, very fortunate to have Summer Sears, CPA, to do that. She specializes in government budgets. And so we're really entering a new era in terms of accountability and expertise.
And I think we're doing a lot better working the park district and the city.
Yes,
you know,
indeed.
I think that's
well, I think we care about each other.
Right.
Because we're partners. Now, we're trying to, it's been difficult to get all five board members to agree at a time when they can go over the comprehensive plan and approve it so that I can bring it to you guys for a work session to look-see.
And that's on our agenda, I know, to have both a joint meeting at some point. We just keep pushing it off.
Because we have to do that, and then I've got to basically kind of present it to the commissioners, and then we can have our public hearings and then do it.
Okay.
So, anyway, it takes time, you know. Yep. Nothing gets accomplished in a day, right, Jake?
That's right.
Thank you. Anybody else over there? No? Okay. Staff comments? Corey going first?
Yeah, I'll do these pretty quick, because they're all in motion, and they're all at a good place, I would say, and council will be spending more time talking about them and being a part of them in the near future. So the TGM grant is underway. The consultants were here last week at the June 21st Planning Commission meeting. They spent time interviewing stakeholders that Wednesday afternoon and Thursday morning. And the stakeholders are folks who represent kind of the demographic groups in the city, you know, whether it's folks weighing in on low-income issues or senior issues or multimodal issues or affordable housing or any of those kind of things that people have input on. So they were doing stakeholder interviews. So they're working away on that project, and they'll be spending some time with the Planning Commission in the next couple months. In the fall, there will be some joint meetings, and then council will ultimately have the ability to either move forward with their recommendations that the code changes or not as winter comes. But that project's well underway. The sign consultants for the monument sign down here, they emailed me yesterday and said they are ready. They have some conceptual ideas to share with the council. And so I told them tentatively to plan July 12th is our next scheduled meeting. I was thinking we would do a work session maybe prior at maybe 5 or 5:30 for 45 minutes or an hour, however long it takes, to look at their concepts, provide feedback. I need to work, and last time we talked about this, I was going to recruit a handful of folks to kind of be citizen members of the committee to help shape that. So they would be here on the 12th, planning to have that. Had a good conference call earlier today with the Sustainable City Year folks. They are submitting their grant to the Ford Family Foundation at the end of next week. So I need to spend some time in the next handful of days getting them an updated copy of the proposal. Now, we budgeted $60,000 for that project. They're planning to get $60,000, so $1 for $1 match from Ford Family Foundation. And with $120,000 for that project, we can do that program. We can do a lot of projects. So I'm adding things to the proposal. Once I update the proposal, I'll send it out to council. And until at some point, we're going to enter into a contract with them. So if I'm adding in some project ideas that they've told me that there's faculty that are interested in doing them, doesn't mean it's going to happen. It's just putting more options on the table. But I'll send an updated proposal when I finish that and send it to them. But it looks like things are going good on getting that lined up. I'm optimistic. We spent a couple hours, Jake and I spent a couple hours. The mayor was here briefly. Brandon Mahon from Anderson Perry was here as well earlier. We were talking with the USDA folks about, we received that $2.5 million in grants from USDA. About $5 million in loans, city contribution of $800,000.
For water.
This is for the water project, expansion project, thank you, and improvements project. So that is looks very, we're in very good shape with that project. That's, you know, we were talking 6 months ago, a year ago, about these, you know, ideal funding scenarios, and they're basically coming through.
Awesome.
We're still waiting to hear back on the USDA wastewater component, so that's going to be another big couple million in grants, hopefully, and loan dollars. The work session in July, Brandon's going to come down. We're going to do a big update for council in terms of what we know we've gotten, where the couple question marks are, how does that fit in line with our estimates in terms of monthly rates, and then we might still have to find something out in August, but by the fall, I'd say by September, we'll know 100% how much those projects are going to cost, and then we want to have another open house in probably September, maybe early October, the latest. So a month from now, we'll be talking to Brandon on that. Deschutes County reached out. They would like to have a joint meeting in the fall as well. I was thinking September, kind of work around the September work session. So that gives us a couple months to a few months to get to that point. And we can certainly discuss items that all of you want to talk about, or, you know, Tom Anderson, the county administrator, and I will put our heads together on some timely topics. And the mayor's got a couple in mind. And so we're going to pencil that in for now. I'm just giving you a heads up that that's coming down the road. There's other things, but I think that those are all items that I spent time on today. So they're all good stuff.
Okay. Nothing?
Looking forward to hopefully having another team member starting maybe end of next week.
Great.
I'd tell you more, but it's not official yet.
Right.
But it's looking good.
Okay. Up here, any comments? No. Okay, we'll move on to council comments. Karen, let's start with you.
Good meeting. Time to go home.
Okay. That's it?
That's
okay.
It.
Stu, you gonna be longer than that, or is that gonna be yours? Gonna be that short?
It's short. Thank you.
Okay, Connie. Don.
I got a whole bunch, but I'd rather go home.
Okay, I just got a couple things. I did go up to the county commissioner's work session up there and voice my concerns about a few items. And, you know, basically, I told them that, you know, we have a five-year plan with ODOT, that we need a five-year plan with them. And they're in total agreement with it. That's why they want to start meeting. And this meeting is going to be a real productive stuff, not just, you know, it's going to be a work session on things that we want to work out with the county, whether it's
turning the industrial park over to us, whether it's turning the land over at Wiki up to us, it's going to be some concrete items. You know, we got to start getting out from underneath the county's control. And it could be a 5-year, 10-year before we get the streets taken care of, but it was a productive meeting. I'm glad we got the salary stuff all over so we can start moving ahead. I'm going to tons of events this year. 4th of July, I think maybe I should have on-call time.
Come on, the road days.
But anyways, it's mostly fun stuff. And I hope everybody, I know Connie's going to be out of town, but I hope to see you over the weekend. And I like the way the city's moving. We're accomplishing a lot of stuff.
Do you happen to know the times for like the rodeo stuff? Because we can send that out to everybody. Just, I know if you're going to be gone, but well, to the rest of council. We can reach out to them. They're doing it. We will reach out to them.
Okay. So I'll send an email. It's a long list.
Well, for like the council like drive-in or the ceremonies.
Stu's taking care of that one.
Stu's in charge of that?
Yeah, he's going to let us all know.
Oh, you're going to let us?
It'll happen about the time the flagpole gets here.
Okay.
No, I'll send that to you, and then you could send it out.
Perfect. Yeah, and it's usually the last day on the 4th.
It's on the 4th.
Yeah. Usually 1 or 2 o'clock. Last year we rode around in Stu's truck. He said
drive.
Right. Tammy's going to be here. She's coming down, the commissioner. It'll be a wild weekend. Okay. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Where's your motion?
Why are you looking at
somebody?
Me?
Don, make a motion, please.
Make a motion, we stay in session.
Okay.
No, I move we adjourn.
Okay, second?
Second,
okay. Boom. All in favor, aye?
Aye.
All opposed, aye? Okay.
I've had enough coffee and soda today. Yeah. Keep going till midnight if you really want. Jeez.
Are you going to be around early in the morning?
I've got a conference call at 9, but I'll be here before then if you want to come back.